It's the Dry Heat Check with Jay Cohen Espo. That's Greg Esposito.
Hey, you got it right.
I'm Jared Cohen. It is episode 11. We've done this 11 times now, Espo, and now we're going to name this episode after one of the greatest guys ever to wear the number 11 in Arizona sports, none other than Pat Burke.
I want to throw out a challenge flag right now.
Whoa, what?
I want to challenge this. This should be, and I think we mentioned this in a previous episode, I'm pretty sure episode number 7, this should be the Kevin Johnson episode, because nothing is more obscure and random than naming episode number 11 after Kevin Johnson.
He did wear the number 11 before he wore the number 7.
The first 3 months he was here,
but
after
nothing
he was
is
from
more
Cleveland.
Obscure and random than Pat Burke's NBA career.
I would like everybody to know I'm doing the show under protest. Because we're going with Pat Burke and not Kevin Johnson.
As he mentioned, Kevin Johnson did wear the number 11. Other sons that did. Zarko Chabarkaba, who was Eric Sorensen's choice to name the episode after
I didn't
today.
Want to name it after him because I figured one of us would screw up that name if we named the episode.
Come on, I always get those former it's random foreign names right. Wesley Person, a former favorite son of mine, loved Wes Person.
Aquaman, my good friend Jeremy McPeak, who is leaving the Suns, actually nicknamed him Aquaman on a cover of Fast Break magazine.
Good stuff. D. Brown, not the guy that blindfolded himself with a dunk in the dunk contest a year ago, the Illinois Fighting Illini that went to the Final Four and broke U of A's hearts, D. Brown, played for the Phoenix Suns.
That's what you go for with the D. Brown from the Celtics, not the Reebok pumps?
The Reebok pumps was part of it. Come on. The blindfolded dunk, the arm in the dab. No. He invented the dab.
It was all about the pumps. He made the Reebok pumps the shoe that everybody wanted
at
the time.
I'm going to go under protest to say that his dunk in the dunk contest is more recognizable than the pumps.
No, the pumps today.
That he wore the pumps. The pumps might be more recognizable, but his dunk is more recognizable with him than the fact that he wore the pumps. I agree to disagree.
You can be wrong. It's all right.
Markieff Morris, we'll move on. Brandon Knight also wore the number 11.
He hasn't worn it yet.
He will be wearing it this year. 2016 and beyond. How about Cardinals? It's the all mediocre to bad quarterback team with the number 11 in the first few years of the Arizona Cardinals.
And we sat there beforehand, and our good friend E. Eric Sorensen, the aging wonder, I said... There were mediocre quarterbacks from the 90s that wore number 11 for the Cardinals. I know. I can't think of it. He's like, no, there wasn't. Well, there's three of them here.
Jay Schrader, Kent Graham, Jeff Blake.
I believe Jeff Blake was in the 2000s, but Jay Schrader and Kent Graham, definitely solid in the 90s, not solid at playing.
And the last player to ever wear the number 11 before Larry Fitzgerald did, starting in 2004 till present, and will probably be the last one to ever wear the number 11 in that uniform, was Kevin Casper, the small, shifty Iowa wide receiver the year before Larry Fitzgerald made history.
Yeah, I'm really glad that he gave up that number to one Larry Fitzgerald.
I think a lot of people would agree. How about some Diamondbacks? Jose Guillen, who came in and played some solid seasons. Richie Sexson, who played a month for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Mr. Torin Labrum, best known for hitting one home run off the scoreboard and never doing anything else again.
Augie Ojeda, who got some votes for naming this episode after
you
today.
You voted for him.
And so did Eric. Eric liked Augie Ojeda. And then A.J. Pollock, who is back and might be the best player to wear the number 11 in the history of the Diamondbacks, the way things here are going.
not might be.
And finally, from the Coyotes, one of my favorites from growing up, Dallas Drake. Dally Drake was a longtime Coyote winger for the Coyotes, wore the number 11. Cardinals versus Patriots this weekend, Espo. So there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of hype around this Cardinals team. And now we get to see it come to fruition in week one on a national stage.
Well, look, I'll be honest. I'm quite frankly worried about this team. Now, you're not going to hear that from a lot of people. We are currently, let me put it this way. I watch Bachelor in Paradise with my wife and the whole Bachelorette series.
Can't believe
you can take my man card, but that's fine. I'm going to tie it together to sports, I promise.
I'll tell you the story of why I owe The Bachelor, though. Because of The Bachelor, I have my wife today.
Oh, well, we'll have to talk about that at some point.
One day.
This probably not the appropriate time.
No.
Can I get back to what I was saying?
No, actually, we'll just keep talking about The Bachelor.
Well, see, when you watch those shows, they put these people in this truncated timetable to find love, and they just want to convince themselves that everything's great, and in 4 weeks they can find the love of their life, or however long it is, and they ignore everything else. They're just so focused on they want this great thing.
They want to win.
I feel like that's where we are with the Cardinals right now. Everybody so badly wants a winner in this town because it's been so long since we've seen a team actually have a great deal of success outside of the Cardinals last year. Now they just want to see this winner, and they're ignoring what is instinctual as Cardinals fans to believe that things probably won't work out. And in the end, I'm not comfortable as a Cardinals fan being a fan favorite and a Super Bowl favorite. I don't know how to operate like that, because growing up in this town, every time you thought something great was going to happen, you get a Buddy Ryan 8-8 season and then 4-12 and he's gone. Those are the kind of things.
You get that, the incredible Steve Nash era, which came up with no championships.
Oh, you get the Cardinals crazy Super Bowl run, and then Kurt Warner retires and the wheels fall off. Like, there's just inherently, you come to expect the worst. So it is very counterintuitive right now for me as a Cardinals fan, and to look at this and really think, okay, they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a Super Bowl favorite. Some of the national media is picking them to make the Super Bowl or even win the Super Bowl. I'm not sure. I'm not fearful that we're going to get to a point where Carson Palmer looks very much like Jake Delhomme, where he has is a top-flight quarterback, has an awful playoff appearance, and then the wheels completely fall off. I did not see anything in the preseason, and yes, we said, don't worry about preseason.
Yeah,
you got to prove
thing.
It in regular season. Yeah. But I did not see anything in preseason to make me feel overly comfortable about Carson Palmer at this point. That worries me. That worries me immensely. Now, if they come out and they blow the doors off the Patriots this weekend, it eases some of those fears. But I am always going to be uncomfortable sitting in the catbird seat as an Arizona Cardinals fan, because you're one injury away or one awful stretch of games away from being a complete and utter disappointment.
Now, it's interesting because I'll just throw this in there. Yesterday was my birthday, so we'll go in there. So I get
you're
all
just
these
taking these weird tangents on the show.
I know,
again.
Right? All these weird tangents. But there's a method to my madness.
Sure.
I have a lot of family in Chicago. So I was called by my cousin and her husband, and we were just talking football. You know, we were joking around that Robbie Gould got cut and on the Bears and this and that. And then my cousin's husband says to me, "Man, people out there in Arizona sure are hyping up the Cardinals this year." Because he went to ASU, so he knows Arizona well, even though he lives in Chicago. And he was kind of in a backwards way reminding me that it's still the Cardinals. Nationally, people still think this is the Cardinals, but just the hype that people are talking about around here and the expectations, it's kind of frightening, because only two things can happen here. There's no in between. Either you have an unbelievable run, or it's unbelievable disappointment. And
so you're saying it's all or nothing.
It's all or nothing. And the odds are normally that, because of the percentages, that it's going to end up in disappointment. So hey, I think I really encourage Cardinals fans to just enjoy the ride. It's a fun team. It's a great coach. A lot of great personalities. Don't get too caught up in the run and what could be as a result of the season. Just enjoy the season and let it play out. I know that's hard to say and it's hard to actually live, but I urge you to not be thinking Super Bowl going into week one. Think about week one and take it one step at a time, and maybe you'll enjoy it.
I'll play the pessimist. In your mind, prepare for the worst, but be ready to be pleasantly surprised. That's just, as a Cardinals fan, that's the way I've always protected
myself.
That's
what history says it should be.
And I'm prepared for 7-9. And if that happens, okay, that I'm prepared for it. I'm hoping for, 14-2.
Espo, Bill Belichick's coming to town.
He is one
of the best all-time coaches in any sport.
The hoodie master.
Yes, so it should be fun to watch the chess match between him and Bruce Arians. So I pose the question, which we like to do. Top three movies/TV coaches.
Are we going to alternate?
We'll alternate.
Okay, my number three is Lou Brown from Major League. All right. He motivated a group of basically losers, guys that in the movie they questioned, is that guy even alive to bring in? He coached them to success. ultimate success. He was fantastic and he was funny. He's what you want from a coach. Lou Brown from Major League is number three on my list.
Number three for me, John Candy, coaching the Jamaican bobsledding team to a potential medal if they didn't crash in the Olympics. Unbelievable. Bunch of sprinters who'd never been around snow. Unbelievable coaching job.
And you got to love John Candy. Number two for me, Chubbs from Happy Gilmore. He took an angry hockey player and turned him into a dominant force in the PGA, all right? We're talking Happy Gilmore was Tiger-esque
Chubbs,
at that time.
He took his hand.
It was a one-handed golfer, then an alligator took his hand, and he motivated Adam Sandler, a.k.a. Happy Gilmore, to play well.
I'm going to go Denzel Washington. Remember the Titans. He took a team of that was there was segregation all over Virginia. He took a team. He could not lose one game or else he would have been fired. He had a perfect season, plus tragedies occurred, and he was an unbelievable catalyst for a community that needed to be reunited. I'm going with the guys that are based on real stories here, not just made-up fictional characters.
I really wanted to go with Will Ferrell's character from Semi-Pro as my number one, but I had to go with a serious choice here. Coach Herman, Denzel Washington from Remember the Titans. Not only did he defeat racism, but he was able to concentrate as a head coach with Ryan Gosling on his team.
Right?
So he's number one.
And my number one is got to be Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. He went to three state championships in 4 years in Texas for football. Not to mention he took a team that was off the grid and had to restart a team in the tough area of Dillon, Texas, and turned them in 1 year into a state championship winning team. Coach Taylor, Friday Night Lights, that's my number one coach.
See, I always wanted to see him and John Voight's coach from Varsity Blues, their teams face off in the ultimate fictional Texas championship
game. That would be a good one. You know, and plus, not to mention, he had players showing up at his door at 10 o'clock at night and had the daughter of a high school kid drama. One of them was dating his quarterback, so it's
whipped cream bikinis. There's all sorts of weird stuff going on.
So switching gears away from football, Devin Booker is in the news, but in a roundabout fashion. Drake is in town, his concert, U.S. Airways Center. I guess it's Talking Stick Resort Arena.
Get it right.
Gosh, I can't. It's had like five different names in my lifetime.
Put $5 in the jar. You got it wrong.
All right. What is this $5?
Every time you screw up, we're going to put $5 in the jar, and then I'm going to buy myself something nice.
Oh, okay. Okay, sounds good. That works. So Drake comes out wearing Devin Booker's jersey, and my favorite son's jersey currently right now, mind you, the black one with the white outline and black writing. It's a good-looking jersey. And Drake comes out rocking the Devin Booker jersey in front of all the fans.
You want a fun fact about that jersey?
Let's hear it.
I actually named it. It's called the Civic Pride jersey, hashtag humblebrag.
Okay. They see y'all pulling out the stops with the jersey naming. So anyways, it's pretty cool that in a time where it's all about the Cardinals lately and the hype around the Diamondbacks and the Suns just can't seem to catch a break, the Drake comes out in a Suns uniform, which I think was a nice score for the Suns organization and their knight in shining armor, Devin Booker, getting some love like that.
Well, look, it's the Kentucky connection because Drake is a big Kentucky fan.
Sure he is.
There's like 40 million teams that Drake's a big fan of, but Kentucky's one of those 40 million. And so we knew that there was going to be some kind of shout out to the Kentucky connection here in Phoenix, all the guards from Kentucky. I was surprised that it was a Devin Booker jersey. I didn't know where we were going to go with it. But you got to wonder, are the other Kentucky guys feeling a little slighted?
Is Eric Bledsoe,
Brandon Knight, Tyler Ulis, Archie Goodwin, are they feeling a little slighted that Devin Booker got the Drake jersey? Now, they all got a shout-out from Drake at the concert. Should we explain for the older audience who Drake is? No,
please.
We'll leave it alone. Brad, we'll let Brad explain to people.
It's a younger demographic show today.
So I wonder, is there any contention there? But there are some concerns. I'm starting to wonder, is there a little too much hype for Book with this? We know that he is very beloved by Suns fans because they're looking for anything to latch on to after a rough 6-year stretch, but is too much coming too soon for him?
Yeah, so that raises the question of the segment, Espo, is we have Devin Booker, who right now looks like the knight in shining armor for the Phoenix Suns, the exact guy they needed at the exact time. Good-looking, great player, great personality, coming out to Larry Fitzgerald's supper club last week in a BMW in a fresh suit.
Good looks and fresh suits are what scouts look for in NBA players.
And then so. It's basketball skills. And then there's also David Johnson. There's young Devin Booker, and now there's David Johnson, who got so much attention in All or Nothing, who had a great back end of last season, who is being pegged as one of the top picks in fantasy football drafts. And every time you pull up Yahoo Fantasy, there he is in the home screen. I think I've seen 5 or 6 different pictures with David Johnson pertaining to certain articles in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I know you don't like talking fantasy sports on this, Espo, but we posed the question. David Johnson and Devin Booker, rightfully so, getting a lot of attention. But is the hype getting too much too early with these two?
For me, no, because everything they did in their rookie seasons was deserving of it. It's not like these guys were mediocre at best in their rookie seasons and the PR machine is trying to pump them up. In Devin Booker's case, I feel like he's a guy that can more than handle being the center of attention, has the personality for it, is able to handle the media, is great like that. David Johnson on the other end of the spectrum in terms of he's not the big, huge personality like Devin Booker is, but he's the kind of guy in that Larry Fitzgerald vein that has those great stories about him and his fiance and now his wife, who they're having a kid, and there's just this all this feel good, good guy vibe.
Well, fact that he was he spent time in dorms when he was at Northern Iowa fixing up the dorms and with his tool belt and doing that in the off season as a job in between school years. Like there's that story leading into him all of a sudden being an NFL running back. So,
and they both just have this different pedigree, but both lend themselves to being stars. Devin Booker is just that big personality, that big smile, went to Kentucky, was on the big stage from the word go. David Johnson comes from the small school, is the every guy, is quiet, has that Larry Fitzgerald type smile. I don't think it's too much too soon. Now, when we talk, when we have David Johnson's position coach and All or Nothing talking about Hall of Fame, maybe that's a little much. I don't think you can say that he's a Hall of Famer based on one game or one season, but he has an immense amount of potential. So does Devin Booker. And I have no problem lifting them up and saying, hey, look, this is the potential. This is where everybody expects you. Now live up to it. And that's the key to any superstar, is being able to handle that and live up to the hype.
Absolutely. And when you look at Devin Booker and David Johnson, at least at this point, David Johnson is on a team full of personalities that's ready to win now. And so he can kind of get lost in the shuffle so that all the spotlight isn't just on him. So much spotlight is on Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians and Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd and Calais Campbell and Chandler Jones and Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson. There's so many names. Granted, it's a bigger roster, but it's a great roster with a lot of personalities. When you have Devin Booker, there is Eric Bledsoe, there is Tyson Chandler, there is Brandon Knight, but at the same time, he is the one that is the hope. You look at the other guys on the team, and they have been in the league for a little bit, and they've been kind of the consistency with the Suns team that just hasn't made the playoffs in how many years now?
Devin Booker, it's six.
Not that we're keeping track or anything. Devin Booker is the potential for change and the potential for the light at the end of the tunnel. And if he struggles, I feel like it'd be a lot harder on him in a sophomore campaign than it would be for David Johnson if he does. Plus, Devin Booker doesn't have the depth behind him, so that if he struggles or gets hurt or isn't the hype that's around him off the bat, there isn't someone like a Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington backing him up to pick up the slack, and it doesn't result in losses with him not being out in the action. So I think there's a lot on Devin Booker right now. There is a lot of attention, a lot of hype, and I think if there's anyone fit to handle it based on talking to him personally, that he is the one that's equipped to do it. He just has that it factor about him. You could tell it based on just standing in his vicinity. You could just tell. But there's a lot more on him. And I do kind of worry about the hype because, like we talked about already, in this town, when there's a lot of hype on anything, it normally leads to disappointment. That's all we know. If there was results of that not happening, then that's fine. You could even look at the college ranks. ASU, man, they had back-to-back 10-win seasons, and they had the hype going into last season with national championship hopes and the roster to back, or the schedule that could back that up, and they fall flat on their face. U of A in basketball can't get past the Elite Eight despite the incredible rosters that Sean Miller has had. More often than not, there has been disappointment around hype. So I worry for these two having so much hype around them, and hopefully they could buck the trend a little bit.
Well, look, the odds are one of them is likely going to fail, but you bring up Devin Booker. I think he's the best thing that could have happened to Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, and the Suns rookie class this year because the attention's on him. So now Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, they can just go and be themselves and operate and play their game, which in the past, especially last year, there was an immense amount of pressure on those two guys to be the stars, to get everything done, and I think that affected them as much as anything. Then you bring in rookies Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris. There's not as much expectation on those two lottery picks because most of it is being channeled to Devin Booker, and that's before we even talk about T.J. Warren and Alex Len. And I think T.J. Warren's the forgotten guy. I think he's going to come in and have a huge season. And the one thing is, fans are going to be disappointed in Devin Booker this season because he's not going to score as many points as he did last year because his usage rate isn't going to be as much. They're going to have more scoring options. He's going to be more efficient, though. And I think that's where fans need to look. Is his efficiency good? Is he scoring at a high percentage when he does get his shots and shooting better from three? Point total isn't going to be what we should judge Devin Booker by.
The airing of grievances, Espo. It's one of your favorite things to do each and every week on the show. And there are some things that are really, trying to bring out your inner Costanza here over the last week with things that are around Arizona sports.
Well, look, and I could have had 14 this week, but
you could have
90
every week. There's always something.
I think I'm
going to limit you.
I think I'm going to stay to two. We might sneak in a third. I don't know. We'll see how
it goes. You did 2.5 a couple weeks ago.
See how it goes. But the first one I want to talk about is the fact the Phoenix Suns have brought purple back. It is back on the court around the rim. Last year they had made the lines on the court purple, but it is fully back for the first time in a long time.
So to you, is it like bringing sexy back?
Don't make bad, Justin. Do not sully the good name of Justin Timberlake with whatever that bad joke just was. That may be my next airing of grievance,
okay,
is how bad your jokes are on this show, Jared. But let me get back. I don't want to stray too far from this before I lose my train of thought.
Gone off the rails.
Look, I'm not mad that they brought purple back. I'm actually excited that they did. What I'm mad about is, why did it take so damn long? The last time that purple was around the court, around the outside of the court, was 1999-2000. Okay, we're talking backcourt 2000 days when Penny Hardaway and Jason Kidd were the backcourt of this team. It was the last time that purple was a prominent color on the court.
And we referenced about three or four shows ago how that was arguably one of the most disappointing seasons in Arizona sports history. So
certainly was, and it just frustrates me. I was on the inside. For 5 years, I fought this battle from the inside, and it's nice to finally see that I decide to leave the organization and they actually make a change.
Maybe it's an honor of you, Espo.
No, it is not. There's no honoring my time there, but I just don't understand why for so long purple was kind of pushed aside from the color palette of the Phoenix Suns. It is such an important part of the history of the Phoenix Suns. It is interwoven in the fabric and the story of this team. I remember writing a note to the Phoenix Suns and Jerry Colangelo when I was a kid asking, okay, why purple and orange? Why are those the colors of a team named the Suns and in Phoenix? And the simple answer was...
He wrote back.
And the simple answer was, have you ever looked at a sunset in Phoenix? The predominant colors are purple and orange, and that's why the Phoenix Suns colors are purple and orange. And to me, that's always been, when I see those sunsets, what I think. And the fact that orange moved to the side for black and gray and all these different things over the last decade and a half, two decades, was frustrating to me. And I am glad that they are fully embracing the history of this team and welcoming purple back fully. I hope home uniforms are the next step where we get to see purple on there. The fans have always wanted it. That was the thing I heard the most when I was running Sun social accounts was, where is the purple? Why has purple gone away? And I am excited that it's finally back. but I'm frustrated that it took so damn long to become part of this.
And forever, it was known as the Purple Palace.
Yeah.
And it was called the Purple Palace because there was purple everywhere. There were purple seats. There was purple on the court. There were purple in the uniforms. And you're right. It's gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm glad that finally that heritage is being brought back. And in time for the 50th season is next year. So hopefully there's a lot of embracing.
I remember the 25th season was the finals team.
92-93, which will be 25 years.
25 years since that team? That should be a celebration in itself.
Now hopefully it will be.
So, Greg, you have another area.
I do.
You have two.
I'm an angry guy.
I guess you have three that you wanted to mention now because of me. But
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Please,
and you're going to hear about it.
Just an angry guy you are.
Yesterday, DeAndre Ayton announced that he was going to be coming to the University of Arizona. The number
one Wildcat graduate, I have no idea why you're upset, but continue.
Listen. Okay, number one prospect in all of college basketball, a guy that's been compared to Kevin Garnett, I think is great that he's coming to the University of Arizona. My problem is the way that we let these high school kids announce where they're going to college. He did this live on SportsCenter yesterday, announced where he was going. Do we realize how ridiculous this is? This kid is doing this on SportsCenter, and we lambasted LeBron James for doing the same thing. LeBron James did The Decision on ESPN. He sat in front of a camera and spent time announcing where he was going to play, where he was deciding to play, and they made a whole spectacle of it, and it turned him into a complete and utter villain. Yet for some reason, we celebrate teenagers doing the same exact thing on ESPN and other national outlets, announcing where they're going. These kids who all they have going for them really is potential and some outlet ranking them as a five-star recruit. All right? I don't like how we're putting so much attention on these young kids in that way, and a lot of pressure as well.
A lot of
because
pressure.
Because they buy into their own hype. Maybe they don't. I'm not passing judgment on DeAndre Ayton. I don't know what he's going to do, how he's going to do, his mental makeup, but you put a lot of pressure on kids. When you turn them into stars when they're in high school, when you're showing their games on ESPN, at some point, it worries me that it's changing the mentality of these athletes, and it's affecting even pro sports as we go forward as well. And that's before you even get into the one-and-done mentality of college basketball and how it's slowly ruining things. But I don't like how we're letting these teenagers announce this the same way LeBron James did. We kill a grown man for doing it, but we praise a 17-year-old. What is that teaching them when they get into the pros? It makes no sense. It's counterintuitive to me, and I don't understand it.
Well, and then part of it is, you know, it's a me mentality. You know, it's not a team mentality. When you get up in front of a camera and you announce something that you're going to be doing and the schools that you're going to be committing to are in the dark, they have no idea. You know, here's an example. Alex Barcelo, who is another local kid. Ayton plays at Hillcrest Prep School here, and we'll get into that in a second. Alex Barcelo, who also committed to U of A for the 2017 class, who in terms of public schools and AIA-affiliated schools is probably one of the best, if not the best, 2017 prospects in Arizona. He just put out a message on Twitter and called it, and that was the end of it. You know, there's that mentality, and then there's this mentality. But you're right. And a lot of these live broadcasts, too, you will see these kids saying, I am taking my talents to wherever. I don't think Ayton heard that. And Eric Sorensen and I were watching it live, and it was loud in the room, so we couldn't really hear much. But it's the same thing where I've seen on signing day for football, going into college football, kids saying, I'll be taking my talents to blank. And people use that saying as just the most negative connotative thing as a result of what LeBron James said. Yet you have high school kids saying that, and they're supposed to be praised and celebrated. So
look, and I am all for these kids getting attention for the immense amount of talent they have and what they're doing.
And the amount of work that it takes. It's not just talent that gets you this far.
No, and choosing a school. I'm fine with that, but I struggle with the fact that they announce it the way they do, but then you look at that, and ESPN's making money off of them the way they're announcing it. That new school's going to make money off them. It's this whole machine that they're buying into this hype. It frustrates me the way that happens.
And one more thing to add to that. Every time I've been covering recruiting now for 5 years. The last three or four, every time you ask a kid about their recruitment, they tell you either they're excited for it to be done, that they didn't like it, that they are overwhelmed. It's because there is so much pressure. Rarely do you hear a kid say, oh, my recruitment was amazing. I had Texas A&M fly me out and show me their incredible facilities. And I got to meet Johnny Manziel. And I got to talk to Christian Kirk, who took me on the visit. You never hear about, it was an unbelievable experience. And I will never forget it. I will always remember the times that I was being recruited and pursued by college football or college basketball or college baseball. You never hear it that way. You only hear it's exhausting, it's overwhelming, the pressure on these kids is ridiculous, and then having a broadcast like that live only adds to that. You never hear a kid say, I loved it. You always hear him say, it was really hard, and I'm glad that it's over with. And it shouldn't be like that, because these are huge decisions for these kids, but they're also extraordinary accomplishments, and there's something that should be celebrated for these kids, not to come with pressure and not to come with negative stances, because it's just unfortunate. You never hear that it's been an amazing experience, and I'm excited that the culmination of this experience of people wanting me to play at their school for their college is coming to an end with a climax of the decision that I'm making. You never hear that.
Well, and when you treat them like superstars, it adds to the pressure of, this is one of the biggest decisions of my life. If I make it wrong, I'm going to screw up my entire future. And that's, like, to your point, that isn't the way this should be. This should be exciting that they're trying to figure out where they're going to spend 1 to 4 years of their life at and enjoy the college experience.
And hopefully for Wildcat fans, DeAndre Ayton remains eligible. I know he was asked on SportsCenter Live if he's going to go play pro overseas instead of going to play for U of A, and his response was that his family and him does not want to forego the opportunity to play in this country for a college basketball team, so he has no plans of not going to Tucson. However, he's playing at a prep school currently. There's always some kind of gray area with prep schools and NCAA eligibility. We saw that with Prime Prep in Dallas, which caused one of the 2016 prize prospects for U of A, Terrence Ferguson, to all of a sudden not go to U of A at the last minute, and now he's playing overseas in Australia with an Under Armour contract. So you worry that these kids that are coming from the prep schools and not the public schools situation, or at least some of these long-standing prep schools like Findlay Prep, Oak Hill, and some of the other ones around the country, you worry about the NCAA eligibility. Is there something that's missing? Is there something that has not worked? Are his grades up to par? Are his requirements from an academic standpoint enough to be able to get him into college? You just worry about that. And this is the first time, this might be the most high-profile recruit U of A has ever landed in the history of the program. And you really hope it doesn't end with sour grapes like it has with Ferguson, with Brandon Jennings a few years back. That's what can happen here. And hopefully for the Wildcats' sake, they're not on the wrong end of it once again.
Well, to keep the pessimistic theme going on, they say things come in threes. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy. So those are this week's airing of grievances. We'll wrap this up now, Espo. How can everyone find the Dry Heat Check podcast?
This list just keeps getting longer, but we'll start, as always, with Twitter, at Dry Heat Check. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/DryHeatCheck. You're going to notice a pattern here. DryHeatCheck.com. which will take you to sports360az.com, of course. You can also find us on iTunes, search Dry Heat Check. Please, 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 I beg of you, because I have mental problems, I need you to leave us a review, okay? I'm not even asking for 5-star anymore. Let's just leave a review. It helps other people find the show on iTunes. You can do the same on Google Play. You can find us on Stitcher and Audio Boom. I'm pretty sure, oh, and Instagram.
We're on Instagram now.
Dry Heat Check. That's everything. I'm pretty sure that is everywhere you can find us. If you want us to add another channel, hit us up. We'll look at it. Weibo in China, maybe. Who knows?
Wow, he's just pulling out all the stops. The point is, you can find us all over the place, but we want you to join in on the fun. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been episode Pat Burke of
Kevin
the Dry
Johnson.
Pat Burke of the Dry Heat Check with Jay Cohen Espo.